Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. One of the things critics like to throw out against intelligent design proponents is the claim that there are no peer-reviewed scientific papers that support intelligent design, and that's proof that it's not science. It's a line that's been used for some time. Here's a clip from MSNBC back in 2005 in which Eugenie Scott, the executive director of the National Center for Science Education, assures viewers there's nothing at all to the claims of intelligent design proponents.
Eugenie Scott, my understanding is that there is not a single peer-reviewed article out there that supports intelligent design. Am I wrong?
You are not wrong. You are correct.
That wasn't true then, and it's especially not true now. Casey Luskin of the Discovery Institute is with me now to talk about the 50th peer-reviewed paper for intelligent design or reflecting intelligent design. 50 of them have been published now. Casey, when was the 50th published?
Well, it's a bit difficult to precisely know exactly which one was number 50, but we have marked it around a paper by Stephen Meyer and Paul Nelson. It was published in the journal Biocomplexity last year, dealing with the origin of the genetic code. I believe the title was, Can the Origin of the Genetic Code Be Explained by Direct RNA Templating? And the paper was a response to a biologist named Michael Yaris, who had argued that material causes can explain the genetic code. So in any case, that may have been 49 or 50. It's not entirely clear. Maybe it was 51. We've got over 50 now. We know that for sure. And I think this is an important milestone. We're not saying, by the way, that, okay, ID has reached some kind of a plateau and there's no need to continue to produce peer-reviewed scientific papers. Of course, the ID research program needs to continue going, but it is worth noting that, you know, we've reached a milestone. And as you said, the critics were wrong then. Well, they're even more wrong now.
What is the purpose of making sure that these papers are published in peer-reviewed journals? Who are you trying to convince? Or who are the scientists trying to convince?
Well, we're trying to make the case to the scientific community that there is a scientific argument based upon legitimate evidence and using the scientific method for intelligent design. And so these papers bear out many aspects of ID arguments, ranging from biological complexity to cosmological issues and looking at evolutionary computation and what the Darwinian mechanism can and cannot do and why we need intelligence to produce the kind of information that we see in life. So these papers collectively make a case that intelligent causation is necessary to produce the sort of biological complexity that we're discovering in the cell today. So I think that this is important for making the case to the scientific community that ID is a viable explanation for what we're seeing.
When was the first ID peer-reviewed paper published?
Well, on our list, the first paper that we have goes back to 1984. It was a paper in the American Journal of Physics by William G. Pollard, who wrote a paper basically arguing that if you look at Big Bang cosmology, that requires some kind of a transcendent reality, some kind of a cause or an intelligent source in order to design the universe. That was obviously very early in the ID days. I don't think William Pollard would necessarily even have thought of the term intelligent design, but he was certainly making an argument that is an ID argument, and it's an argument for a designer of the universe. And this is in a very respected physics journal. So, and from there, it just kind of started to pick up steam. We had a few papers in the late 80s, another article by Stanley Yackey, Teaching of Transcendence in Physics, also in American Journal of Physics a couple years later, where he was arguing that we should help educators to teach the evidence for design of the universe. And then, of course, we get into the 90s when the ID movement really gets going and you see a lot of arguments relating to more familiar intelligent design positions.
Describe some of the variety of topics that these ID peer-reviewed papers have covered.
Well, a number of them look at information and where does information come from? How do we produce biological information? And they're kind of looking at that question from two different angles. Some of them look at it from an empirical angle in terms of when we go and perform tests on biological systems, what kind of information are we uncovering? Doug Axe's research in the Journal of Molecular Biology is a good example of this. He performed mutational sensitivity tests on enzymes and found that they require a very specific amino acid sequence in order to do their jobs. And so this is a good example of finding specified complexity in life. Wolf Eckhard Lohnig in Germany has done some research on plants, which has uncovered what he thinks is irreducible complexity in life. And there's also been research by Ann Gager and Doug Axe at Biologic Institute finding specified and irreducible complexity in biological systems. Now, another sort of track of papers would be what you would call more theoretical. These are papers that are dealing with questions about, sort of in the abstract, what can the Darwinian mechanism do, and where is intelligence a necessary cause? A lot of these papers have come out of the Evolutionary Informatics Lab, headed up by William Dembski and Robert Marks in Texas, where they're basically looking at evolutionary simulations on the computer of the Darwinian process. And they're asking, when we have people claiming that these computer simulations can produce new information and supposedly showing that unguided Darwinian mechanisms can produce new information, what's really going on here? And they developed a whole methodology and scheme. They really created a method of analyzing these papers and these computer programs that allows them to ask, what in this program is actually being done by the Darwinian mechanism or sort of an unguided search mechanism? And what is being done by an intelligent programmer? What is intelligently programmed here that sort of gives the program a head start, so to speak, above and beyond what an unguided and blind Darwinian type search would be able to accomplish? So they're able to actually theoretically tell the difference between what is being done by Darwinian mechanisms and what is being done by intelligence. And these evolutionary computer simulations actually provide a very good means of asking those kinds of questions. And they're finding that when you look at a lot of these computer simulations of evolution, they actually are smuggling in information via the programmer. And it's not actually an unguided search that is solving these problems. It's an intelligently guided search. And so at the end of the day, they are coming to a similar conclusion that, again, intelligence is necessary to produce the kind of information that we're seeing in these programs.
Scientists who submit for peer review any paper referencing intelligent design frequently experience a great deal of animosity and anger from the scientific community. You have an example from Baylor University where Bill Dembski and Professor Marks were getting together to research intelligent design. There was a $30,000 grant to pay for that research. And when the university found out that they were touching on intelligent design, they forced a stop to all research and forced a return of the money, which is a rare thing. Describe some of the challenges that they faced.
Yeah, I mean, you know, universities are not known for giving back money. But in this case, Baylor University actually apparently would rather not have $30,000 for research if it might support intelligent design. So when Baylor found out that Dembski and Marks had started the Evolutionary Informatics Lab on their campus and had this $30,000 grant, they required them to give the money back, which is really unheard of in the world of university funding. So yeah, there are a lot of challenges and obstacles that ID proponents face. One of the articles that's here on Evolution News talks about some of the obstacles that ID proponents specifically have faced in trying to get published. Michael Behe has told a story where a few years back, he tried to submit a paper to a peer-reviewed journal that was arguing for irreducible complexity. And he was basically told that this paper had to be rejected because it was outside the orthodoxy of the field. And again, I mean, this is just amazing because you're seeing right there in front of you that these journal editors are rejecting views, not because they don't have merit, not because there is some flaw, but simply because it is not within orthodoxy. And Michael Behe wrote, "The take-home lesson I have learned is that while some science journal editors are individually tolerant and will entertain thoughts of publishing challenges to current views, when such a group as the editorial board gets together, orthodoxy prevails." And this was in response to a journal editor who actually wrote him this. Listen to this. He said, quote, "Your unorthodox theory would have to displace something that would be extending the current paradigm," unquote. So again, simply because it's quote unquote unorthodox, not because it lacked merit, but because it was outside of the sort of mainstream quote unquote consensus view, and they would not publish it.
That's an interesting thing. So in order to publish, you have to conform, which exposes the lie that the only thing we're interested in is evidence. Because if you're interested in the evidence and challenging those views, then submission to orthodoxy wouldn't be a part of the standard. Not only do ID proponents have trouble getting through the firewall of scientific orthodoxy when it comes to getting their papers published in peer-reviewed journals, in some cases because those who would publish are afraid of the response that they'll receive, but they also have trouble talking about it in the media, and it's been like this for a long time. At the opening of this podcast, we played the cut.
Jeannie Scott, my understanding is that there is not a single peer-reviewed article out there that supports intelligent design. Am I wrong?
You are not wrong. You are correct.
That was on MSNBC in 2005 when the Dan Abrams Show had Dr. Stephen Meyer of the Discovery Institute on the show with Eugenie Scott. Then Dr. Meyer corrected them to explain, oh, wait, I actually have published a peer-reviewed ID-related paper.
I have published a peer-reviewed article, and Eugenie Scott's organization, the National Center for Science Education, led the charge to discredit not only the article, but the editor who allowed it to go through peer review. Since that time, eight or ten additional articles have been published, and there are several peer-reviewed books advocating intelligent design.
Well, I think the peers may be the other people involved in this organization. But
no. This was published at the Smithsonian's top technical biology journal by an editor with two.
Eugenie Scott, let me let her respond. Go ahead.
Well, you're asserting false things.
Your article doesn't mention intelligent design. Your article is an attack on evolution. Now, as far as I'm concerned,
the last part of the article is an article about intelligent design. It's a case for it. It's a positive case for design. Get on our website, viewer.
Eugenie, wait, hang on, Steve. Hang on. Let her respond.
We're having a lot of fun here, but it's misinformation.
Steve Meyer, hang on a second.
She can't tell me what is in my own article,
She can be more honest maybe about what's in the article, though.
Okay, but was she more honest about what was in the article back then? Casey Luskin, on that show in 2005, the claim was, well, you might have had a peer-reviewed paper, but it really had nothing to do with intelligent design. She claimed it never mentioned intelligent design. Dr. Meyer said it did. You have the paper in front of you.
Yeah, let's just read from the paper. Dr. Meyer's paper in the conclusion says, quote, an experience-based analysis of the causal powers of various explanatory hypotheses suggests purposive or intelligent design as a causally adequate and perhaps most causally adequate explanation for the origin of the complex specified information required to build the Cambrian animals and the novel forms they represent. And he goes on to say, for this reason, recent scientific interest in the design hypothesis is unlikely to abate as biologists continue to wrestle with the problem of the origination of biological form in the higher taxa. So that's a direct quote from Dr. Meyer's 2004 article in Proceedings for the Biological Society of Washington. This whole episode, David, is a really good example of what ID proponents face. When you get out there debating this issue, sometimes on the other side, the facts just don't matter. They have this talking point, this sort of myth that needs to be perpetuated, which is that there are no peer-reviewed pro-intelligent design articles, and nothing will change them from acknowledging that that claim is false. They have to maintain the pretense that there is no science whatsoever on ID so they can continue to suppress it, prevent it from being mentioned in schools, basically lead witch hunts against the scientists that are out there in the academy that are supporting ID, and to try to convince judges, unfortunately, also to make false rulings against ID that ID has no science. So I would hope, however, that as more and more peer-reviewed articles get published, that even these Darwin lobbyists that have these agendas will have difficulty looking themselves in the mirror and saying that there are no peer-reviewed scientific papers. I mean, at some point, how much longer can you deny this reality that this is happening, that there is an ID research program, that we are publishing papers in mainstream peer-reviewed journals? So, I mean, you have to wonder how long this can go on. But again, this research program is not being put forth for these unconvincible critics. We're not trying to reach them. We know that they're not have no interest in really seeking the truth here or actually investigating the issue and treating this debate fairly. They have their own agenda. We're interested in reaching those scientists out there who are open to seeking the truth and scientists who are interested in hearing about what the evidence has to say about intelligent design. And so Dr. Meyer's paper is absolutely right. The interest in the debate over design is unlikely to abate because the evidence is there. And papers are continuing to be published showing that that evidence is there. And the critics can say whatever they want, but they cannot change the data.
Maybe when paper number 100 is published, maybe then they'll start changing their minds and taking another look.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that they will go to fallback positions. I can already tell you what the fallback positions are going to be. They're going to say, well, that article was only published in the journal Protein Science, or that was only published in the Journal of Molecular Biology, or that was only published in Annual Review of Genetics. Those are all articles that have published pro-ID articles, peer-reviewed articles. They're going to say, we want to see a paper in Science or Nature, which are obviously the two leading scientific journals out there. And they're going to say, until there's a paper in Science or Nature, then I'm not even going to take you seriously. Well, you can see that they're just moving the goalposts. They're retreating as time goes on. And the bottom line is that this is not a principled reason that they're giving for opposing ID. And it's actually a quite dangerous philosophy of science when you think about what they're saying. They're saying that science ought to be a popularity contest where they will only take a view seriously once it appears in certain journals. And if you look at the history of science, and actually historians of science have very strongly cautioned against scientists taking this view because it tends to hinder the progress of science. After all, every single new scientific theory, every scientific revolution started off as a minority scientific view that probably had trouble getting published in the journals, or at least in the really big top journals. And so if you automatically have this knee-jerk reaction where you close your mind to a view because it hasn't been published for Science and Nature, you actually are not going to open yourself up to the way science is supposed to work and being open to new ideas. By the way, for those who are interested, Darwin's theory of evolution was not originally published in a peer-reviewed journal article. It was published in a book. I don't even believe it was with an academic press. It was just published with a trade press, Darwin's Origin of Species. And this is very common that a lot of minority new scientific views, they have to sort of cut their teeth at the beginning outside of the mainstream scientific journals. I think the fact that Intelligent Design has published peer-reviewed journals in journals like Theoretical Biology and Medical Modeling, or the Journal of Advanced Computational Intelligence and Intelligent Informatics, or Quarterly Review of Biology, or Cell Biology International, or Physics of Life Reviews, you know, in addition to some of the other ones we mentioned, the very fact that ID has published peer-reviewed articles in these journals shows that there is something real happening here. There is serious science going on. You're welcome to disagree with it. Folks are welcome to take whatever opinion they want on it, but they are not welcome to sort of deny the reality that this research program is real, this program is happening. And, you know, I would advise critics that if they want to endear themselves to sort of fair-minded people who sort of take reality as it is, they should stop using this false talking point that there is no peer-reviewed science. They would be better off to just acknowledge that they were wrong, that their bluff was a bluff, and that they were trying to maintain this sort of facade for too long. And if they acknowledge reality, then it might actually look more credible to the fair-minded public.
Where can people find all the peer-reviewed articles in one page?
If you want to find the full list, I can give out that URL if it's okay, David. It's www.discovery.org/A/2640. I know that's kind of a
weird
URL. Wow,
make it easy.
Here we go. It's www.discovery.org/A/2640, and you'll be able to see all the peer-reviewed articles in one page.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of ID the Future. For more information or to support the Center for Science and Culture, please go to idthefuture.com and click the yellow donate button. This podcast is copyright 2012, the Discovery Institute. All rights reserved.